is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Dan Hurley. Later in the program, we'll talk about why African Americans have the highest mortality rate for all cancers combined and other racial disparities with the disease. But first, sharks. We've been talking about them since the movie Jaws was released decades ago, and maybe even the Saturday Night Live Land Shark spoof. But as the Discovery Channel's Shark Week begins Sunday, we'll sort through what the truth is about these predators of the ocean. Joining me is senior scientist and chair of the Fisheries, Science, and Emerging Technologies Program in the Anderson Cabot Center for Ocean Life at the New England Aquarium, Dr. Nick Whitney. He's currently in residence at the Newport Aquarium. You can join the conversation by emailing talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Certainly glad to have you here today. I'd like you to start out telling us what a shark is. I think everybody has a general idea. You know, it's this creature that lives in the ocean. But you tell us, why are sharks special to you?
Sure. Well, sharks, they are fish, but they're a little different than bony fish, which is how we refer to it, the typical fish that people think of. Their skeletons are made of cartilage, so just like your ear or your nose. They have big jaws, big teeth, and they're very long-lived and slow to reproduce, different from most of the bony fishes. So that makes them really vulnerable to things that humans do, like fishing, for instance. Shark populations can take much longer to recover from overfishing than certain other bony fishes like tuna or dolphin fish or things like that.
So you say long-lived. How long does a shark live?
Some species can live over 100 years. A lot of them live at least the same duration that humans do. Some of the sharks that we work with, I was just on an expedition in the Florida Keys where we're tagging sharks that we first caught and tagged 20 years ago, and they were adults back then, and they're still around and swimming and carrying our tags.
How many, I don't know if babies is the right word. What is the right word for it? Is it the babies? What do you call them?
Yeah, pups.
Pups? What, yep. How many would an average female shark have over a lifespan?
It varies widely by species. From some species can have 100 or more, and most species have very few. So some species can only have one or two at a time, and that'll only happen every 2 or 3 years. So a lot of them can be very slow to reproduce.
So people generally, I think, are afraid of sharks. You, since you actually get up close and personal to them, are not. How come you're not afraid?
You know, I definitely started out afraid of sharks. And I grew up in southern Michigan, and the only thing I knew about sharks was what I had seen from Jaws. So I was terrified whenever my family went on vacation to the beach, and I wouldn't go in the ocean. But I started trying to learn more about sharks and read about them to try and figure out if there was a way to go in the ocean without being eaten. And I started to learn that they were really cool, really fascinating animals. And now I feel like I know enough about where they are and what they're doing, you know, not to be afraid, but also smart enough to, I know enough to avoid certain situations that might be more dangerous than others.
Well, let's talk about that. You thought that you did this research and you found out they were really cool. What's cool about a shark?
Oh, man, there's so many interesting things from their behavior, the fact that they some of the sharks that we study, for instance, are very social. They interact quite a bit. Many don't seem to be. We've learned that our nurse sharks that we've studied in the Florida Keys are the females mate every other year. The males come in every year. Males will sometimes cooperate with other males during the mating process. Really complex behaviors that we don't normally expect to see in fish. Other things that come to mind recently, we've learned that hammerhead sharks, for instance, spend a lot of time swimming on their sides because they have a huge dorsal fin on their back, and that actually provides a lot more lift if they swim sideways. So that's something that's been uncovered recently. There's all kinds of fascinating things about you know, how they feed, how there's so many things we don't understand still.
So when you start your studies, what and you brought in your tagging device today. So can you, right. We're on the radio, so you describe for me, what does it look like?
Sure. It looks like sort of an orange float that's about the size of a styrofoam cup. And it has a little antenna that sticks out of the top. But if you turn it over to one side, you can see some electronics embedded in one side of it. And that's what's actually doing the work on this device. It's actually an accelerometer tag. It uses the same technology that's in your smartphone or your Fitbit, except instead of counting how many steps you take during the day, we can actually count how many fin beats a shark makes during the day. And instead of, like, when you look at an image on your phone and you rotate the phone and the image rotates, so you're still looking at it upright, that's using the accelerometer. We can tell when the sharks are rotating and pointing down or up. It also records depth and temperature. So this is the what are they doing tag. For decades now, we've been tracking where sharks go. This tag tells us what they're actually doing when they go to those different places.
Now, you told me something really interesting before we went on the air, and I said, well, gosh, that's really expensive, and I bet you lose a lot of them. And the answer is no.
Yeah, so we're storing so much data on this tag. We're recording about 100 data points every second to get the really fine-scale behavior, and it's too much data to transmit back to us by satellite. So we actually store the data to memory, and we have to get these tags back, which is why they're embedded in this orange float. And so we attach them to the shark's fin with a special strap that corrodes in seawater, and then that allows the tag to come off the fin, float up to the surface, and we go around in a boat listening for the ping from this antenna, and we can find them and get them back. And surprisingly, it works pretty well. We've gotten back over 94% of our tags after tagging a couple hundred sharks now. Some of them big sharks that swam a long way. We've recovered these off of white sharks that were 55 miles offshore after just a couple of days. So,
How quickly do they come off?
It depends on the study. So some studies we're trying to look at how well sharks do when they're caught and released by fishermen. The assumption is that as long as you do catch and release, the sharks swim away and live long, happy lives. But some of them will actually die anyway when you release them from stress or injuries. So in those cases, we often will just monitor for a couple of days just to see if it survived that initial period after release. Other times we'll go for a week or more. These tags fill up on memory after about a week, but we have some larger ones that can go several weeks at a time. So it all depends on the study.
Now, my most important question is, you talk about how you use some sort of adhesive to get that tag on the shark or get it on the shark. You do that personally? You get that up close and personal to the shark?
Yes. We have to catch the sharks in order to attach the tag. So we will, depending on the study, we'll catch them on a rod and reel or a long line. Or sometimes in the Keys, for instance, we can go into really shallow water while the sharks are mating and catch them in a giant dip net and just pull them over and tag them in water that's about knee deep.
Do they fight you on that?
They're usually not happy about it, but they'll, after a couple of minutes, they'll usually calm down, especially if they're kept in the water. And then we can do measurements and record all kinds of data and then attach our tags to the fin.
Most people don't want to be that close to a shark.
No, but, probably for good reason, but for us, we need to get close.
Well, let's talk about the whole idea of being scared. There was a shark bite situation. At least I think it was a shark bite. They removed, I believe, a tooth from someone's leg today outside of New York. A 12-year-old and a 13-year-old kids were swimming, and I think they were something like 10 feet offshore and were bit.
Oh, wow.
But this doesn't happen every day. And how dangerous are sharks, and do they really want to come after people?
No, I mean, I think both the good news and the bad news is that sharks do not care about you whatsoever. They're not interested in humans, and humans are not on the menu. They're looking to feed on their normal prey. But the bad news is that they also may need to come. They may be interested if you're in the water in an area where they're feeding. They may come and make a second pass just to see what you are. A lot of times they're going to be scared away immediately and take off. That's probably most of the time. And the vast majority of people who are seen by a shark probably had no idea that the shark was even there. But in some cases, they may, depending on the species, they may circle back and take a closer look. And then if they're really curious or interested, they may, they don't have hands where they can reach out and grab something to see what it is. So they may actually use their teeth to do what we call an investigatory bite, where they're just trying to see what this thing is. And we think a lot of bites on humans are probably just that. They're just trying to see what you are. And that's why most people who are bitten by sharks do survive, even when they're bitten by big white sharks and things that could easily, you know, take you apart.
If they're not looking for humans, what are they looking for?
They're looking for their normal prey. We have off Cape Cod, for instance, right now, this time of year, we have a lot of white sharks, and they're looking for seals. The seal population has really increased over the past decade in that area. So they're coming in looking for a seal. And if you're out swimming in an area near seals, you may look like the slowest, dumbest seal they've ever seen. But fortunately, they're very good at recognizing the difference between a seal and a person. And we're very fortunate that they are.
How close to the shore do they come ordinarily?
It, again, depends on the species. Some of them are very coastal and can come very close to shore. The white sharks that I was just mentioning off Cape Cod will spend long periods where they're near shore and along the coast if they're trying to feed on seals, and then they'll go offshore for months at a time and be hundreds of miles out. They'll go to Bermuda. We've had one that crossed the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. So it varies quite a bit.
Do people need to worry when they go swimming? What should they look out for? Is there anything that you advise?
Yeah, I think people need to be smart when they go swimming. And I always tell people, first of all, that if you go to the beach and you're seeing a lot of birds feeding in the area and you're seeing a lot of big schools of bait fish in the water, that's usually what draws the birds in. When we're out fishing for sharks, that's what we look for to catch sharks. We look for those big baits, schools of bait fish. Because if there's a lot of those all together, there's probably bigger fish feeding on them and there's probably sharks around trying to feed on them. So
that's a good day not to go in the water, perhaps?
Yeah, or at least, you know, try not to swim right through the middle of a big school of bait fish. There's other things to look out for. I tell people, if you're worried about sharks, swim at the beach with the most other people there, because there's safety in numbers, and a lot of people is likely to scare sharks away. Or if, you know, the unthinkable happens and lightning strikes and someone does get bitten, there's more of a chance it's not going to be you if you're at a beach with a lot of people.
Safety in numbers. I like that. So you've been researching sharks for a long time, tagging them for a long time. Your most recent trip, you said, was in the Florida Keys?
Yes. A place called the Dry Tortugas, 70 miles west of Key West. There's a big Civil War era fort out there called Fort Jefferson. It's a national park. But it's also one of the only places in the world where you can see sharks mating in clear, shallow water on a predictable basis.
So how often do you get out there?
About once a year during the mating season is when we try to get out there. It's a really great time to observe natural behavior in the wild. You can almost never observe natural behavior in sharks. Anytime people see sharks, it's almost always because they're fishing or they've been chumming the water. In this case, you can observe natural behavior. And they also, when they're mating, are very distracted. And so they're very easy for us to catch and then put tags on. The fact that they also come back every year means we can put really long-term tags on that record a lot of data, and then we can actually get them back. They return our tags for us, which is great.
So when that happens, and you said you've tagged more sharks more than one time, how do you know you're tagging the same shark?
Yeah, great question. So we have a lot of the sharks have ID tags. They have colored tags on the fin that are the same tags that are used on farms on cattle ear tags. But those come off sometimes. So we also tag every shark with a pit tag, which is that little, it's about a rice grain size tag that, you know, your cats and dogs have in their neck.
Like a chip.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's just a microchip. So every shark that we catch will scan the fin where we normally put in the pit tag, and it'll give us a unique ID number. So even if there's no visible tags on it, we can look in our records and tell who that shark is.
So what do you learn from year to year as you're looking at that same shark? What kinds of things are you trying to find out?
Well, one thing we're trying to find out is just how long these sharks mate, how many years they're actually in the mating population, how long it takes. We also tag juvenile sharks out there and newborns, and we try and determine how long it takes them to grow up so that they're reproductively mature. And we see some fascinating things, some very consistent behaviors. There are certain sharks that seem to be the dominant ones in the population, and you can tell even before we identify those sharks, we can tell that they're a more dominant animal, and then we catch them and look at their ID, and it's the same one that was dominant 5 or 10 years ago. Some sharks, we caught a shark this year that we had in the net, and these are nurse sharks in the Florida Keys, which are normally a very docile shark. And we had one shark that kept, we were doing our tagging, and she kept bringing her head around and trying to bite me while we were doing the tagging. And we looked up her record, her ID, and this was a shark that we had caught 10 years ago that was named after my sister. And I named her after my sister because she kept trying to bite me 10 years ago when we caught her. So this was the only shark, only nurse shark we'd ever had that was actually trying to bite me.
Should we worry about your sister?
Well, you know, it's... I look at it as it's sort of a love-hate relationship kind of thing. So that's why I named her after my sister. But we do give the sharks nicknames just because it's easier for us to remember individuals that way instead of just remembering a six-digit ID
number.
Do
they look different? Do they have different coloring? Or
yeah, they do a little bit for sure. And a lot of them can be identified, even without tags, can be identified from irregularities in their fins. They bite each other, then that will leave little fin irregularities. But yeah, some are much lighter in color, some are very dark. So they do look different once you've observed them enough.
So it's interesting. You do a lot of your work. You worked in Hawaii for a while. You said, off the Florida Keys. You've gone to New England as well. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
So with all of that, how does this all come back and relate to what you do at the aquarium?
Well, that's a good question. So what we're doing here, one of the things we're doing here at Newport Aquarium is, and something that I've done in my work for the past 10 years or so, is try and develop new ways of tagging sharks, new attachment methods, incorporate new types of technology. This tag right here is a float that we actually built ourselves. We design and build these to allow us to put accelerometers on the sharks and actually get them back. So one convenient thing about having animals on display, like at Newport Aquarium, is that we have access to these large animals anytime we want, that we can try out different attachment methods and try and develop less invasive attachment methods. So a lot of our tags require us to actually make a little hole in the shark's fin and thread the strap through there. And at Newport, we're working on ways, various clamps and magnets and other different ways to attach shark tags to the shark's fin that don't require us to actually make a hole in the fin.
Why is it important to learn about them? Why is it important that we find out how they do what they do?
Well, sharks are important parts of the marine ecosystem. They're apex-level predators, meaning they're at the top of the food chain. And we know that in areas where sharks have been eliminated from the food chain, you tend to have a very unhealthy marine ecosystem. And one of the ways that can happen is through something called the trophic cascade, which is basically a fancy way of saying a domino effect. So if you take out the top-level predators in an ecosystem, the animals they would normally feed become overpopulated, and then at the level below that, they eat all the fish at that level. So then they're gone, and then whatever those fish would normally eat becomes overpopulated, and it basically adds up to you can end up having coral reefs die because sharks have been removed from the top level of the ecosystem.
So they're pretty important.
Yeah, they're very important, and we don't really understand all the ways that they're important yet.
How long have you been, in general, have they been studied? I mean, I think people have been afraid of them long enough that maybe you didn't want to do that right away. I mean, have people been studying them for 50 years or?
Oh, yeah. Yep. People have been studying sharks for 50 years. But of course, it's, you know, we can learn so much more now than we could back then. I mean, it started with just catching animals and killing them and dissecting them. And there's a lot of important biology that was learned that way. But then, you know, in the 60s, we started to develop these electronic tags that could be used to follow sharks from a boat for short periods. And then later, satellite tags that could be used to track sharks even when you're not following them from a boat. And now these accelerometers are finally allowing us to see what the sharks are actually doing instead of just where they're going.
How fast are they?
Wow, it depends. Mako sharks are probably one of the fastest species, and they can... they can go, you know, as fast as a slow-moving car. They're not going to go as fast as a cheetah on land or anything. Other sharks are, you know, the nurse sharks that we study are thought to be a very slow-moving shark. They spend a lot of time resting on the bottom. And we did a study that showed they have the lowest metabolic rate of any shark species we've studied to date, meaning they're able to rest on the bottom in one place and conserve energy really well. But it turns out they're migrating up from the Keys all the way up to off the Gulf Coast of Florida. We had one that went to South Carolina this past spring and showed up again back in the dry tortugas this summer during the mating season. We were very surprised to see him. He's named after my 9-year-old, so we recognized him.
Well, you know, speaking of these sharks that you named, do they recognize you? Do you think they, you know, if you see them year to year, do you think they have any idea that they're back again?
Yeah, that's a great question, and something we debate quite a bit with my colleagues. Some of them seem like they definitely, if we've caught them before, then they seem like they're much more difficult to catch. Like they remember, you know, the big
humans. They don't want that to happen
with
again.
The nets. Yeah. But others we just catch over and over and over again. And we know there's a lot of variability in the intelligence between individuals within the population. So I think some of them are very smart and remember the human capture experience and avoid it. But others, I think a lot of them are just, especially in our key study, they're just so focused on mating that, you know, we're able to catch them over and over again.
There's probably a joke in there, but I won't make
There's
it.
There's lots of jokes in there.
Let's talk very briefly about Shark Week and what people see. Do you think that gives misconceptions of who sharks are? Is it good to have Shark Week, bad to have Shark Week?
You know, that is a great question and something that I struggle with. I think overall it's good. And I think there's a lot of shark scientists who first got their interest in sharks because of Shark Week. And it's certainly something that I watched as a kid. And there are also some, in recent years, I've seen some really good shows come out of Shark Week that have covered some real science. There's also some shows that are not as good. I personally am not a big fan of the shows that show a lot of attack reenactments. And sensationalize that side of sharks. But the reality is that's what a lot of people are interested in seeing and talking about is the fact that sharks are one of the last remaining predators that still are around to bite people.
Let's go back to the movie Jaws. And I will admit I've never seen it because those kinds of things just scare me.
Oh.
So I've seen bits and pieces. I've even seen the display where they, you know, show the actual fake sharks that they use in the movie.
Sure.
I've even been to that, but I never saw the movie. But do you think that just gave sharks a bad name?
Oh, it definitely gave sharks a bad name. And it definitely led to an attitude for a while there that the only good shark was a dead shark. A big lack of sympathy for any commercial overfishing that was happening with sharks. So that was definitely an issue. Fortunately, I think we've really come away from that attitude now. And it's very rare to hear people say that, you know, they think sharks should be removed from the ocean. You hear it every once in a while. We now have people kind of the other side of the spectrum. You know, I've heard a guy say that he would gladly let his, 5 and 6 year old grandchildren swim with white sharks off Guadalupe, which I think is
that's a little scary, isn't it?
Yeah, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't even do that, right? Not even your 9-year old that's named after
right,
a shark.
Right, right. Exactly. I mean, people describe them as being. I don't know why we need to make them, you know, cute, cuddly, stuffed animals. I mean, they're wild animals. So some people like to talk about them as being just as harmless as your neighborhood golden retriever. But if your neighborhood golden retriever was 16 feet long and weighed 3,000 pounds and ate things that were the same size as you or bigger, you would be pretty leery when you saw that golden retriever, you know, out in front of your house. So, you know, they're wild animals and any wild animal can potentially be dangerous.
You talk about fishing. Do you eat shark? It's not weird for you?
No, it's not weird. I mean, I know enough to eat sharks from fisheries that are sustainable, and you can have sustainable shark fisheries. But a lot of them, of course, are unsustainable. We happen to do a pretty good job right now in the United States of managing our shark fisheries and have the chance to provide an example to the world of how to have sustainable shark fisheries. But overall, sharks are definitely in trouble worldwide.
Are they in all the oceans?
Yes. Yeah.
And so you'll find them in Europe and you'll find them in Africa and you'll find them off the coasts of Europe and Africa.
Yeah. I mean, at least historically, they've been decimated in a lot of those areas. But yeah.
Any last words of wisdom you have for people that maybe want to learn a little bit more but don't want to get too close?
Gosh.
Besides come to the aquarium, I know.
Right, yeah. I mean, aquariums have become a really great place to learn about sharks and actually see them up close. I mean, right here at Newport Aquarium, we have an amazing shark exhibit that rivals a lot of the larger aquariums. And
How many sharks do you have at the aquarium?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know what the count is. And we have a large shark tank. We have a smaller one with that has smaller sharks that you can actually touch, a touch tank. We have the stingray touch tank area, which stingrays are close relatives to sharks. So Newport Aquarium is a great place to go to see them up close firsthand and also learn more about them.
Thank you so much for being here. This has been fascinating.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We've been talking today about sharks, and my guest today has been senior scientist and chair of the Fisheries Science and Emerging Technologies Program in the Anderson Cabot Center for Ocean Life at the New England Aquarium, Dr. Nick Whitney. He's currently in residence at the Newport Aquarium, hopefully permanently, he says.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.